This is Whitley Strieber, and this is a special edition of Dreamland. There has been an extraordinary breakthrough. Linda Moulton Howe, for many years, has wished that some of the sheriffs in Montana who have witnessed ultra-high strangeness would go on the record, because she's known for a long time that they had some extraordinary things to say that they would not make public. It has happened just in the past couple of days. So get ready for what is going to be one of the most extraordinary stories you have ever heard. For you non-subscribers, I'm delighted to say there will be no commercial interruptions during this edition of Dreamland, except for this one. I'm going to ask you personally, from the bottom of my heart, to subscribe and to support this website. It needs you as literally never before. The truth is not out there only. It is also in here. There is nothing in the world like the archive that this website possesses. It is a magnificent journey to the edge of reality, unlike anything else anywhere, because it has been created with the utmost care and integrity. In order for it to survive, and to survive my life and my wife's life, it needs support. We can't go on forever doing this. We need you to make it possible for it to continue. Now, of the people who listen to this radio program, more than 9 out of 10 do not subscribe to unknowncountry.com. So I urge you right now, change that. Become a subscriber, and not just become a subscriber, but participate. Go into that archive and use it as a learning tool. There is nothing else that even approaches it anywhere on planet Earth. Go to unknowncountry.com, click on the subscribe tab, and sign up now. Then come back and listen to what is going to be one of the most extraordinary interviews you have ever heard in your life. You will never forget this. And never forget that this is the truth. This is what is real. This man isn't lying. He isn't lying. And that is going to really knock your socks off, as it has Linda's, as it has mine. Linda Moulton Howe's website, earthfiles.com, one of the most important websites in the world. Don't miss a single day of this Emmy award-winning reporter's work. It is terribly important, and you can, when you hear this interview, you will not ever forget that again for a single moment. And here she is from Albuquerque, New Mexico, Linda Moulton Howe.
Thank you, Whitley. I'm going back 46 years ago on March 16, 1967 at Malmstrom Air Force Base. An Echo flight crew was 60 feet underground in the Flight Launch Control Center, 90 miles east of Great Falls. To everyone's astonishment, large reddish-orange glowing aerial disks were seen in the air by the security alert teams. Simultaneously, 10 Minutemen intercontinental ballistic missiles started going offline one at a time every second. That meant 10 of America's most secure military weapons, 60 feet underground, had been controlled and shut down by a force from above ground. Then, incredibly, the same thing happened 8 days later on March 24, 1967, to the Malmstrom Air Force Base Oscar flight. 10 more ICBMs were shut down, one at a time, every second. One of the U.S. Air Force personnel in a missile bunker 60 feet underground then was First Lieutenant Robert Salas. Bob told me, quote, "Absolutely, we knew these red-orange pulsating objects above the missile silos were not terrestrial aircraft," close quote. Boeing investigators concluded after their investigation that the nuclear missile shutdown had to have had a 10-volt pulse hitting into the data line on those 10 missiles. But making it more incredible, something had to have the control to make that electronic signal going into each missile independently, because the missiles were wired to function independently. Boeing concluded that they could find no reasonable cause for this. They could not explain it. They could not understand it. And only 8 years later, in 1975, law enforcement in counties around Malmstrom Air Force Base, such as Cascade and Teton, were chasing not only unidentified aerial craft and lights in the sky day and night, but they were trying to find the perpetrators of hundreds of bloodless, trackless animal mutilations on the ground. Cascade County even had Bigfoot sightings. Off the record, law enforcement around Malmstrom Air Force Base, like Robert Salas, and in those Minuteman silos, knew that something very eerie, baffling, and as they said, not human-like, was intruding. For the first time since I began my own investigations of animal mutilations, UFOs, human abductions, and government policies of denial about these very real phenomena, I have been able recently to talk with retired Teton County Sheriff John Pete Howard from Shoto, Montana. He began with his own firsthand viewing of a Malmstrom Air Force Base radar track of an unidentified object that moved and stopped and turned in the sky in ways that no terrestrial vehicle or pilot could ever do. Here now from Shoto, Montana, is retired Teton County Sheriff Pete Howard.
The Air Force had put in place a mobile bomb scoring range north of Shoto. There's a small town, Pendroy, like a population of 35 people. They put this mobile bomb scoring range in so the jets would come from around the U.S. They were B-1s, two different bombers that utilized that range. And they would fly an east-to-west bombing run, make a turn up on the mountain front, which is about 20 miles west of us, and then their outbound route would be straight west, and it would be south of the town of Shoto. What happened was the Air Force is always very congenial to law enforcement. This is an area in which we have several of the ICBM Minuteman missiles. So on a quarterly basis, the sheriffs and the county commissioners and other elected officials were invited into Great Falls to the Malmstrom Air Force Base just for a get-together and let's get to know one another, kind of a luncheon thing, and we did that regularly. This colonel, he inquired into the UFO sightings that myself in Teton County, the sheriff and the deputies in Cascade County, Lewis and Clark counties, several of the adjoining counties around here, we're all getting reports of UFO sightings. So the colonel said, well, if you ever see one of these things and you want us to try and track it with this mobile unit, give me a call at Pendroy. So one evening I'm in my office and we get a call that there is a UFO hovering south and east of Shoto, a distance as the crow flies, maybe 10, 12 miles. A friend of mine was sitting in the sheriff's office, so we went out and got in our car. And I said, you watch the sighting, and I'll do the driving, because I was whipping along pretty good speed. And that craft was probably 4 to 5 miles east of the highway. In the meantime, I had asked my dispatcher in my office to call the colonel's number and tell him that we were experiencing a sighting and we're trying to get to the area. And as luck would have it, he happened to be at the site at that time, so they focused their radar on the object we were talking about.
What were you seeing?
All we saw was lights. I was busy driving.
Were there colors?
Well, maybe two or three, red, blue, whatever. So we're proceeding toward that light, and my friend is watching it, and then all of a sudden the light just starts to move. Not fast, but moving. We made a phone call to the office, told the radar site approximately where we were, and the equipment they had in place up there would reach out and they could tell the distance away from their site. They could take a reading on it. They could tell the altitude and they could tell any speed that it was traveling. they finally called back and said that they had a object that was otherwise unexplained. They were watching it on the screen. It was moving very slowly, 8 to 10 miles an hour, going in a northeasterly direction, which was the same way we were going. The difficulty we had, we didn't have a road that would put us right adjacent to the sighting. And then finally, the light went out. It hadn't changed altitude very much. The light went out for a short period of time. Then it came on again. And then it started moving again farther off to the east. In the meantime, we had found another road and tried to get a little closer to it. And as this craft was moving, the Air Force was telling us that we still have it in sight. They did not see the light go out because they had it on the radar screen.
The object was still on the radar.
It was still on their screen. So it started moving a little faster and going to the northeast, and I'm going to say like 20 miles an hour. Then all of a sudden, that light went straight up for a distance of, I don't know, quite a ways. It made an instantaneous stop. And then it started going farther to the east and at a higher rate of speed. Well, the next communication I got from the radar site and the colonel was, could I please come to the radar site? He said, I want to show you something you won't believe. And it took us probably 30 minutes to go from where we were to the radar site. And when I walked in, he took me over to this table where a couple guys are sitting, and it looked like, if you've ever seen one, a polygraph scroll, only it's much larger, 4 feet long, maybe even longer, and a couple feet high. So it was recording the distance from the radar site out in miles. It's recording their altitude. It's recording their speed. Every measurement that could be made was being made by this thing. And these arms are going up and down, and the scroll is being imprinted.
What was it that he showed you?
On the scroll, it showed the track of this thing that they were watching. And then it stops, and then it makes this instantaneous climb of 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 feet, something like that. It makes an instantaneous stop and then starts drifting again, if you will. He said, I don't know of any machine that the United States military has that can do that.
You could see
that. Well, yeah, we're standing right there. I'm not 2-3 feet away from this scroll, showing these markings of what they had been watching while we were out chasing this thing.
And this was the radar tracking that was on paper that showed an object that was capable of going at this speed, stopping, and then going off at sort of a 90-degree angle.
That's true, yep. The upward speed from the time that thing stopped and then went straight up, that was instantaneous. The speed, I don't have a clue what it might have been. And it stops again and then starts drifting. I had, at that time, the undersheriff and a couple of deputies with me, as well as the friend that I started out with, and all of a sudden the door of the trailer, this mobile unit, opened, and a couple of guys in black coveralls came in, located the colonel, and called him off to the side, and they walked over to the table on which this instrument was. They shut the instrument down, and they pulled the paper that it was being inscribed on out of the machine, rolled it up, put it in a silver tube, and left with the instructions that we were to be immediately removed from the building. We were not to be there any longer.
How did they introduce themselves?
I think the colonel realized the minute they walked in that it was government personnel, because they certainly did walk right up to that table and tore that scroll off and tucked it away, and away they went. As they were leaving the parking lot, we were walking out, as they had instructed the colonel to ask us to do. And it's a government car, and down the road they went. The next day, I got a call from the commander of Malmstrom Air Force Base wanting to know if I was going to be in my office. I told him yes, and he said, well, I would like to set up an appointment with you for a phone call from Denver.
Oh, you're talking about Cheyenne Mountain.
There you go, yep. So we made the appointment for afternoon, and I waited and waited and waited. No phone call. Later that afternoon, I got a second call from the commander at Malmstrom, and he said, well, something had come up, and they couldn't make the call. Could I do it the next day? So I agreed to that, and the next day it came and went, no phone call. And then I tried calling the commander at Malmstrom, and we were on a good first-name basis. I could talk to him, but I couldn't get through to him for about a week. That kind of just ended with no answers to anything.
Let's assume CIA, NSA, some intelligence agency in the United States government was notified about this, because how did these two men show up in that office and feel that they had the right to rip out that paper?
My understanding of the process at that time was everything this mobile unit did was coordinated through Malmstrom Air Force Base, because these jets were scheduled to come here to use that bomb site or that bombing run on a scheduled basis. But I think all the coordination of everything that was going on with that unit at Pendroy was happening with the full knowledge and consent of Malmstrom Air Force Base.
And Malmstrom would be reporting directly to the Pentagon?
Probably.
And the colonel who had called you originally to come and look at this motion that they had on the paper from the radar, did he ever call you again?
You know, I don't think he did.
The implication is that the colonel had called the sheriff of Teton County to come and take a look at an astounding radar track of an unidentified aerial object, and that someone wanted to cut off information going anywhere.
Well, that was sure enough my take. When those two gentlemen came walking in there, they were pretty impressive and pretty authoritative. They were talking to the colonel. He said, we're going to take the scroll, and these people need to leave, and that's it.
So communication with that colonel ceases between Malmstrom and your sheriff's office. What was the next incident?
A fish and game employee at the time, who I knew very well, stopped by my office, and he was just pure white, kind of trembling and very excited, and he said, I got something to tell you that you won't believe. What had happened is he was leaving his work site, Fish and Game headquarters, pulled up to the highway. There was other traffic coming, so he stopped and waited. As they were passing, he looks to his left and hears a B-1 outbound, and right above its tail is a UFO saucer thing with the windows and all that. So it goes out of sight to the east following the jet. And that's what got the fellow all excited. So he came in and reported that to me, and that the Air Force did verify that on that day at that location and time, the B-1 experienced a complete electronic failure on board that aircraft.
The B-1 bomber experienced entire electronic failure.
A complete electronic failure on board that aircraft with no explanation. Then at a later time, it reinstated itself.
Did the airplane start falling, or did it seem to be artificially kept up in the air?
No, nothing happened to the aircraft at all.
But if it was 100% electronic failure, then something would have had to keep that airplane in the sky.
Well, I would think so.
UFO interferences with planes and underground nuclear missiles have been happening for about 10 years before then. And they were highly classified events that the U.S. government did not want anyone to know. The non-human intelligences had such easy access and control over our most sensitive military weapons. But then, in 1975 to 76, came dozens of animal mutilations, bloodless, trackless, no evidence, no way to figure out the perpetrators, and they were linked to UFOs that were still hovering in and around Malmstrom Air Force Base. And this news about animal mutilations did reach the public and the media. There were so many cattle mutilations in Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, and other parts of the United States that sheriffs reported some mutilated carcasses were still warm to touch with the bloodless excisions. All the cows, steers, bulls, or heifers were usually missing an ear, eye, jaw flesh, tongue, genitals, and rectal and vaginal area. Law enforcement often described the cuts as looking like they had been done with a cookie cutter, meaning that it was only high, deep, and precise with no ragged edges. I've seen many of these myself. Another common characteristic was lack of blood and no signs of struggle or tracks around the dead bodies. Not even the animal's own tracks. How did it even get to the site that it was lying dead and mutilated? That's what made so many sheriffs and deputies look to the sky and wonder what was lifting and mutilating these animals and then somehow returning them or dropping them back to their home pastures. Several ranchers in face-to-face interviews told me back in 1979 to 1980 when I was working on a documentary for the CBS station in Denver that they had with their own eyes seen beams of light coming from a glowing object in the sky. Some had seen an animal rise in the beam of light. A couple had seen an animal lowered in a beam of light back into the pasture where the rancher was shocked to find the body missing an ear, eye, tongue, jaw, flesh, genitals, and the rectum cored out, again all bloodless. But those eyewitnesses have been and are today afraid of ridicule if they describe their shocking experiences for a media report. Often, abdominal cuts are only the depth of the hide and do not penetrate muscle tissue. Veterinarians have been surprised by the surgical removal of internal organs, including the removal of a big adult bovine heart and bladders without any external body excisions. Typically missing from the animals are an ear, eyeball, and surrounding eye tissue, the lower jaw flesh, and sometimes jaw bone and teeth. The tongue is often removed from deep within the throat in a vertical smooth cut. The rectum is usually cored out in a hole that is approximately 4 inches in diameter and 6 to 14 inches deep. Sometimes the tail is removed in a smooth, glassy-looking cut right through the tailbone at the base of the spine. In males, the entire penis and scrotum are often removed in a very neat, precise, oval excision, only high-deep. Sometimes only one testicle is removed, leaving the scrotum sac intact without a hole or cut. Female udders are often removed with a high, deep excision, or only the teats are removed, leaving neat, bloodless holes in the udder. One of the hot spots over the decades has been Cascade County around Malmstrom Air Force Base near Great Falls, Montana, and the surrounding counties such as Teton, where Sheriff Howard was himself challenged with what was intruding around the Malmstrom Air Force Base area and into Teton County. That's why in 1975 to 1976, Teton County Sheriff Howard not only was amazed by that radar track that the Malmstrom Air Force Base colonel showed him, but he spent nearly 2 years investigating the strange phenomena that was in the sky but on the ground came increasing daily. Mutilated animals, warm to touch sometimes when they got to the scene. Cascade County even had Bigfoot sightings associated with the UFOs and the animal mutilations. One of the most startling reports in the Cascade County Sheriff's files, and the sheriff there was a colleague of Sheriff Howard in Teton County, I've seen this typed on the report that was filed in Cascade County in 1975, about a rancher who was out hunting with his .30-06 rifle when he came face-to-face with an 8-foot-tall, primate-looking creature with long, reddish-brown hair. Without hesitation, the rancher shot at it, and the creature disappeared right in front of him in a flash of light. That's not necessarily organic, or is it? What are we dealing with when it comes to UFOs, animal mutilations, Bigfoot, human abductions? Well, Sheriff Howard told me that after a while, the idea that it was extraterrestrials was something that he thought about a lot.
These phenomena, the UFOs, the cattle mutilations, and in their county, not in mine, they had reports of Bigfoot, and those three things happened all within about a year and a half, all at the same time. And that always led me to believe maybe extraterrestrials. Otherwise, why is it all happening at the same time? So if we weren't out chasing UFOs on any given night, we were probably out looking at dead cows. In their case, they were also doing Bigfoot sightings. We used to have meetings once a month, sheriffs from seven different counties. And so at one point, we considered lasers. And in talking to different people in science around the United States at that time, the smallest laser wouldn't have fit in a pickup truck.
Right.
You know, and they weighed in excess of a ton, something like that, whereas nowadays you might find one that's handheld. When we made inquiry into the use of that thing, they said, well, practically, not only no, but hell no, there isn't a machine made like that that we're aware of.
Right.
If the animal were brought to the laser instead of the laser being taken to the field, they said, we might be able to duplicate a cut like that. We're talking about the very minute cuttings on the hide of these animals, like you're using a pair of...
Pinking shears.
Yeah, pinking shears.
Yeah.
But they're much, much smaller. And they said, we could do that with a laser, but you're going to have to bring the cow to us. We can't take our laser to the cow.
Right.
So we just kind of gave up on it at that time. There's some other thing out there, such as the extraterrestrial. Obviously, if they can get here, they might have some equipment that's pretty foxy. And it wasn't anything that anybody in the scientific community that we could find could inform us on. Everybody said, we don't have the technology yet.
Did you yourself, as sheriff of Teton County, see the excisions of animal mutilations in Teton County that had that serrated edge?
I did, you bet. Yeah, I would go 2 to 3 inches on the outer perimeter of those and excise another piece of hide and preserve the cut edge that we were looking at. Because we were hopeful that at some point in time we'd find somebody that we could submit them to as a sample, and they could determine what it was that made those incisions. Then the other part of it, the very first critter we had was a yearling heifer. And when the local veterinarian got inside of it, he said, boy, I don't know what's happened here, but he said, it looks almost like somebody's been in them because all of the female organs had been excised and removed with no trace of any situation that a veterinarian could do.
Right.
There's no scalpel marks or anything like that. There's no exterior wounds, but on the inside, all the female organs are all removed. They're gone.
The heifer was missing internal organs without any surgery to the outside of the body or evidence of scalpels on the inside.
Yep. And the faceplate, meaning the cheek, something happened to the ear also. Lots of times what they would do, they would take the hide from the back of the lip, back edge of the mouth, right on up to the ear and back behind and take that whole plate off the side of the cheek. And the ironic part of that is when you look at the wound, you know, I've hunted and fished all my life. When I'm butchering a deer or something like that, I'm pretty good at it. But at the same time, you nick and scratch and scrape. There is a membrane that attaches the hide to the meat. And you can leave that membrane on the meat or you can leave it on the hide if you're a good skinner. Well, in this case, it was on the meat just like somebody had polished it off. It was so neat and clean with no nicking, scarring, scraping of any kind. And a lot of those wounds were that way, the same way on the vagina or the rectal area of a cow. The tissues themselves were not damaged.
Right.
Just like somebody had taken that piece of hide and removed it with no, I don't know, it's unexplainable. You'd have to see it to get a full understanding of what you're seeing.
I've seen many. I have collected excisions from the field in formalin and gone to a pathologist and have pathology evidence that the excisions have been done with an instrument that can cook the collagen and can cook the hemoglobin but does not leave carbon residue, which means it is not a laser.
How they do it or how it's done, I don't have a clue. Boy, we had, for the most part, they were cows. I had one Shetland pony, and we had a mature bull. And the pony was right outside of a house. I'm talking almost the lawn was fenced for horse pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And a little freshwater ditch ran through there. Kids had seen that little pony like 4, 5, or 6 in the afternoon, and the next morning was when they discovered the pony laying alongside of that ditch, and the same kind of thing. Faceplate was gone, the sexual organs were gone. Really bizarre. We had 2 yearling heifers. found animals that were near a lake bed. And this lake bed is just simply runoff. It isn't spring fed. It doesn't have a creek coming into it. So over the course of the summer, the lake is shrinking day by day. So there's a mud bank that extends out from the water probably 30, 40 yards. Well, this herd of heifers were in there. There's probably 100, 150 head in there, as I remember. Used pretty much the same path every day to come and go from the water. These two had fallen down close to the water, but in the mud. And then it was like somebody reached out with a shepherd's hook and hooked onto the carcass and just simply drug them a distance about 25 to 30 feet. No other tracks whatever. None. No bird tracks, no other animal tracks, no foot tracks, nothing. Just you could see where the animal had fallen and had been slid across the top of the mud where we found them.
You were impressed as a sheriff that there were no tracks, not even the animal's own tracks.
That was true of most of the carcasses that we looked at from whatever their cause of death was. And I mean, we got a world of coyotes. This is coyote country around here. The coyotes were everywhere. Nothing ever touched one of those carcasses. And yet we had a director of our Montana Livestock Department. He never saw a carcass. But boy, he just adamantly fought us. He did everything he could to belittle and bemoan us and accuse us of wrongfully spending county money by spending any time, much less buying gas to get to these things. And he really gave us a time.
Do you suppose he was taking marching orders from the government?
Well, yeah, I don't know, but boy, he sure wasn't on our side, I can tell you that.
Well, I've talked with a lot of law enforcement who've had exactly the same experience. Somebody from somewhere says, you're going to say it's predator disease or a satanic cult, and that
yeah.
Law enforcement has known that that was not the truth. And this leads to this important question. When you got that call from the colonel about that very unusual radar track, did that lead to any discussion with the colonel saying to you they knew that they were dealing with extraterrestrials or other intelligences?
I don't remember that he made a comment as to what he thought it might be, but I do remember him very explicitly saying, we don't have anything that can do something like that. Right? I think we're also awestruck, and I'm a licensed pilot. I'd flown commercially before I got into law enforcement. So it isn't like that me and airplanes don't know one another. We darn sure do.
As sheriff of Teton County, talking with veterinarians about animals that had organs removed in some method that was unknown without any surgical excisions on the surface of the body, did you, as sheriff, with a veterinarian, ever discuss this is creatures from outer space?
I'm sure we did. We looked at so damn many of them. We've been dealing with it now since the 1970s, and nobody still knows for sure what's going on.
Would you agree with former Sheriff Tex Graves of Logan County, Colorado, when he said the perpetrators of animal mutilations are creatures from outer space?
I certainly will not disagree with him. I would leave a great big opening for the agreement part of it.
But you, with your own eyes, saw that impossible radar track that no human and no terrestrial machine could do.
Yes, we did. There's no question about it.
So isn't that hard proof?
Well, it is, except that who am I to be able to say without question that it is a UFO? It is something not known to man, or it's something unexplainable to man. I guess it would be a better way of saying it, because we are aware of UFOs. But what I saw that night is unexplainable, and as the colonel said, hey, we don't have anything that can do that, so what the hell is it?
And it's important for our Dreamland and Earth Files audience to know that I have veterinarian reports examining those serrated edges in which the veterinarian pathologist has stated that whatever the instrument was, it cooked the hemoglobin, it cooked the collagen, but there is no carbon residue. And that means that we're dealing with a technology on these animal mutilations, hard evidence that something that has not been being used by veterinarians or the military or anybody on this planet to date has been applied to the animal mutilation phenomena around this world in both hemispheres for a century.
Well, Linda, I'm speechless. This is the first time one of these sheriffs has actually come forward, I believe. Yes.
In terms of the people that I had wanted to be able to talk with back in 1979 and 1980, and Sheriff Tex Graves in Colorado would talk with me about extraterrestrials off the record, but when our TV cameras were running, he would only talk about lights in the sky, and it was very difficult. My biggest challenge in producing A Strange Harvest was getting what I was hearing off the record from authorities, fellow reporters, ranchers everywhere, onto the record in front of a camera. Everybody said, you're going to have to get somebody else to say it. But as Sheriff Tex Graves said back in 1979, he at least was talking to me, and he did agree to be in the documentary, but only as far as my showing lights that had been photographed in the sky above a pasture where he had investigated a mutilated animal. He wouldn't say the word that he said to me in September of 1979 up in Sterling. Linda, the perpetrators of animal mutilations are creatures from outer space. I remember this so vividly, emblazoned on my mind, because I was brand new to the whole subject. I was going to talk with sheriffs and to ranchers because there were so many reports in all the Colorado newspapers. And as I began to make phone calls, I realized it was happening everywhere. It was in Canada. It was around in many states. Then I realized that it was happening in Australia, in England, in many, many countries, and that I was in an international story. And all of this was coming at me very rapidly as a complete novice.
So, yeah, boy, that must have been something else.
Yeah, and it was really that Alice in Wonderland moment when you have been in one reality for your whole life, and a sheriff is in front of you and says those words, the perpetrators, and these, that's exactly what he said, the perpetrators of these animal mutilations are creatures from outer space. And that was the beginning of that transition for me into what I now think of as the bigger box of reality, the bigger box that is really true, as you said in the introduction to this program. This is not fiction. This
No.
sheriff, what is so important about retired Teton County Sheriff Pete Howard, is that when they were in the thick of all of this, and they were worried about the military and the Air Force and who were these black-suited men? This wasn't the only time that black-suited men walked into offices and took things as if they had every right in the world and no one in law enforcement had a right to challenge it. He was one of those sheriffs who was dealing with dozens of mutilations, in some cases every day. Sheriff Tex Graves told me, starting in 74 in northern Colorado, they were getting 3 to 4 mutilation calls to the Logan County Sheriff's Office every day.
So it was an incursion going on, something
yes.
that didn't last forever, because they're certainly not getting that many calls now. They come in waves, but nothing like that. And at the same time, in other parts of the country, as far as I understand it, for the most part, the abductions began to be reported haltingly and confusedly. And then the big story that appeared in Look magazine and so on and so forth. So something was happening, and it went on into the, I guess, into the 90s, Linda, am I not correct?
Oh, they're ongoing today.
And ongoing today, oh yeah, but not at the clip that it was going then, because I know when we published Communion, the vast majority of the abduction and encounter reports we received from the public had taken place in the 70s and less so in the early 80s before the book was published. But an enormous number of them took place in the 70s. Now, I want to go back, though, to a
Could
couple...
No,
yeah, go, sure, go ahead.
...here, because this is very important. It depends on the latitude and longitude that you're talking about. If you go back to even 1911 with a report through the BBC that 104 sheep were found on an Australian billabong, all bloodlessly missing ear, eye, tongue, genitals, and rectum cord out, that's 1911, and that was an Australian billabong. If you jump to the early 60s, I have newspaper reports of the same type of mutilations in various parts of the United States. And then in 1967 was the first story that went worldwide press, and that was the horse in southern Colorado that was found stripped of flesh from the neck up. And that became the famous breakthrough, just like Betty and Barney Hill in the abduction syndrome. And it's
right.
Almost, it's, they were 61. Betty and Barney Hill were 61. The horse was 67, but mutilations had been going on long before 1967.
Oh, yeah. You know, I saw one when I was a kid on a ranch in South Texas. We right. didn't know what it was at the time. It just was a dead cow, but messed up. But when I started to see the pictures that you were providing me years and years later, I realized what I had seen.
Yeah, and what is very significant for people in 2013 to put into this puzzle is that between 2002 and 2013 in Argentina alone, it's been going on in many parts of the world, but Argentina alone, the count now is estimated to be somewhere around 4,500 animals in that decade in Argentina, which matches what happened in Canada and the United States in the 70s.
How interesting. So it's moving around. It's as if they, you know, they work one area and then they move on and work another. You know, Linda, let's talk a little bit about what this is, because what we can see of it is that material is being taken that is full of stem cells and sexual material.
Right.
And for the, another thing is that cattle are very close to human beings in their DNA makeup, surprisingly so.
Only 4% difference.
Now, if you were skilled and had a little human DNA and a lot of DNA from these animals, you might be able to build yourself a body that would work in our environment and look pretty convincingly human, at least if no one checked out its DNA.
Or would look like the gray androids. I have talked with people in the human abduction syndrome long ago, 20-some years ago, who told me that the little grays with the big black eyes were constructed, biological, genetically engineered. Well, android is correct because they're biological, but they're doing robotic work programmed like a computer for another intelligence. And that makes a great deal of sense to me if you look back over the last 40 or 50 years and you add to it this extremely important data point. I did an interview about 5 years ago with a son of a man. His father had worked at Wright-Patterson in 1947 in their medical unit. And that father was ordered by a general to go into at 2 o'clock in the morning. He's called from home. He's ordered to come in as soon as possible and met two other surgeons, and they were to do an autopsy, and that there was no, the general did not say this is an extraterrestrial. The general told the father, I want you to use this clipboard, and handed it to him with paper. And I want you to make a running stream of everything that you observe while the other two surgeons are doing this autopsy. This is extremely important. The father stood on the wall opposite the two surgeons who first started arguing about whether they would do a T or a Y cut to begin the autopsy on clearly a non-human on their surgical table. And the note that was the first note that was made by the father was that when they finally decided and they brought the scalpel to the body of this extraterrestrial and they began dragging the knife to make this cut, the knife wouldn't cut through anything. And the knife actually hung up, and that the surgeons said, and the father noted down, this is not tissue we are dealing with here. This is some kind of fabric. The father.
How fascinating.
Yes, and the father told the son, who I did this amazing interview with, that before he died, the father died later, the father had told the son toward the end of their life that he was convinced, and so were his superiors, that they were dealing with a being, that this wasn't a leotard, because they ended up getting into the body, and that the surface of this particular type was some sort of inorganic fabric on an organic being that they classified as an android. That is, to me, one of the most important lenses through which to look at this menagerie of what people call the Greys.
Yes, you know, I always look at it also through the filter of my own experiences. And when you say this, I can't help but remember one of the strangest things about what I was dealing with was the absolute perfection of every sound and motion and the speed with which everything happened. There was a sense when they made a noise that it was a perfect sound, that when they made two sounds spaced, that if you had recorded those on tape and had looked at that tape on an electron microscope, you would have seen a literal line of electrons where the sound stopped and then another line where it started again. There was that sense of perfection. But the other thing that suggests the presence of not just an intelligence, but of a great intelligence was the sounds. Some of the sounds I heard were the most emotionally complex sounds I have ever heard. And these were uttered noises. They were uttered sounds. And it would suggest to me that this is certainly something that has some kind of a machine-like element to it. But within there also is a very, very richly alive being. And I think to myself that perhaps it was an android, but speaking through it from some distant place and living in a sense within it, mm-hmm. was a very, very intelligent and complex being. It was just a very fascinating contradiction. Linda, I'd like to just mention in passing quickly a couple of other things. And once again, through the filter of experience, you've mentioned, and I had not heard this before or had not registered with me perhaps, that you mentioned that organs can be removed without any disturbing of the surface.
Right.
Well, I, of course, have had an implant put in my ear without any disturbance of the surface at all whatsoever.
Right.
It was sore, but there was no sign of any kind of incision at all.
And this goes to my interview with a Dr. Myers in Denver, Colorado, when I was doing A Strange Harvest, the first production that I worked on concerning the animal mutilation mystery. It was first broadcast May 25th, 1980, and at that time, I had gone to Rose Medical Center, where Arlen Myers was head of a unit that was trying to develop lasers for surgery. This is still early for lasers, and I think people forget that today, and that he did a whole series of demonstrations for me in a hospital room that I filmed and is in my documentary of what various electrocauterizing and scalpels and a laser at the time, what could they do? And he said to me, looking at the photographs, looking at some of the offense reports that I had from law enforcement that described that there had been necropsies by veterinarians on some of these animals in which heart, bladder, various internal organs were completely missing without these excisions on the surface. And I'll never forget his telling me that one of his dreams in the future would be molecular specific surgery. He said, I think that we're dealing with something that has the ability to extract molecules There's a vibration. There is something about the heart tissue, the bladder tissue, the esophagus tissue, and all of these different organs. And they have an instrument that can literally extract the molecules, and that's why there is no surgery as we know surgery.
That's very, very fascinating. And, I'll bet something like that might be the case. Now, I would like to turn to the brief mention of the Bigfoot that was shot at and disappeared in a flash of light.
Right.
Because this suggests to me that this is something from another reality. Not necessarily, also possibly from another planet. And don't get me wrong, both things could be happening at the same time. In other words, they could be coming from another world that is also in another dimension. And if so, they might pop in and out of existence like that, literally escaping the bullet by jumping into a reality in which there is no bullet because nobody got shot at. And that might also explain their interest in this particular type of material, all of these stem cells and so forth, because they might be building bodies in our reality that will enable them to be physically present here without perhaps using some kind of energy in order to maintain their presence. And I don't know reality. I'm just speculating. But
well, that is the whole subject of that big chapter 3 in my third book, Glimpses of Other Realities.
I know that. Yes, it is. And folks, can they still get these books on your website?
They're always available at my earthfiles.com website.
Okay, they are really remarkable books, folks. And go to earthfiles.com and get these because, you know, they've been around for a while, but there's never been anything to equal them, not ever. Go ahead, Linda.
And it is so current and relevant today that if there is a genetic harvest of this planet, and let's say it's been going on for 270 million years, as a man who worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency told me, again, off the record, and that we are just the latest model of a genetic creation here, and that the animal mutilations have been a long time evolving process that these various types have used this planet for, then whatever it is or however they're making the body containers, it has been a subject that has come up so frequently to me in the human abduction syndrome. People have been exposed to the idea of bodies being able to be taken off and on by these intelligences.
I have literally seen that done.
Yeah.
I have seen it. I have seen bodies come out of a drawer and suddenly become animated like something had just entered them.
And I had a drawing from an abductee about 20 years ago when I was still in Philadelphia in which they showed a gray, let's say this is the gray android type, not the prime intelligence that makes them, and that the gray was literally drawn, folded up in some sort of what looked like a clear plastic container in drawers, and that the abductee was telling me that this person had seen a whole bunch of these things in drawers, and that they got the idea that they could be animated in this so-called resurrection technology in the tubes of light. So when you begin to jump to where we are in 2013, and animal mutilations have had a huge upsurge this year, there have been all kinds of lights. The abduction syndrome continues. It never has ended. It's just not like it was in that gigantic, we'll call it global awareness in the 60s to the 70s. It's maybe a little more underground now because people began to be afraid of the ridicule that would be dumped on them if they came forward like you and others and said, this happened to me, and then the whole world would end up attacking. So the phenomena is close. It's ever present. It's here, but it's not up front in our reality, and that goes to that issue of that flash of light. If Jim Sparks were in our discussion, Jim Sparks would say, we are dealing with very advanced extraterrestrials that can do molecular extraction. that can literally place molecules of their essence on this planet to observe and to monitor, and that when you realize that the Sasquatch Bigfoot has been also described by many, many people in the abduction syndrome as being one of the extraterrestrials' genetically manipulated creatures to do work on this Earth. Whitley, what has each of the genetically created creatures, from a primate Sasquatch to a Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapiens, what have we each been wired with by the extraterrestrial makers that at any point in any timeline that the extraterrestrials could make a body that could be switched to a craft, switched to a planet through folding space and time because of how it was genetically engineered? To me, this is one of the most intriguing questions now. Who on this planet is roly-poly Homo sapiens sapien, and who are more engineered human-looking that might be able to disappear in flashes of light, just like the Sasquatch? The whole realm of what we're moving into is becoming so difficult to have language to talk about, but the quantum physicists are the closest. And the quantum physicists say There are no restrictions on moving forward and backward in time, and there really is no mathematical restriction on being able to fold space and time point to point, which abductees since the 60s have said was their understanding that this is the propulsion that we are dealing with. It is not chemical. It's not a rocket. It's literally bending space-time, and in that context, the fact that that Sasquatch disappeared in a flash of light when shot by a metallic bullet is not surprising.
Well, Linda, you know, what is surprising, though, is this extraordinary interview. He's finally, I wonder, if are there any others you think might come out now? Could you encourage any of them?
I am now going to ask, and it was Sheriff Howard who encouraged me. He said he knew that the Cascade County deputy sheriff, not the sheriff, the deputy sheriff, Keith Wolverton, who was the co-author on that very historic and valuable book, Mystery Stalks the Prairie, the very first book of authority that came out 30 years ago, by this deputy sheriff in Cascade County with a writer, Roberta Donovan, and that Keith Wolverton, who I had talked to when I was working on my first book, An Alien Harvest, and he gave me photos of the serrated edge, and I got the serrated edge photos from others, but he was clearly uncomfortable. Most of law enforcement that I've ever dealt with, they will talk off the record, but they won't talk on the record. And Sheriff Howard said, Linda, I think if you, and he gave me a contact to get a hold of the elusive deputy sheriff. He said, I think that you might be able now to get him to talk to you. And he said, it's incredible what Keith Wolverton has experienced in his life. And he said that Keith Wolverton has never been able to get past his obsession that extraterrestrials are mutilating animals and are the perpetrator, as other sheriffs have said, and that Keith Wolverton was firsthand dealing with Sasquatch and the whole issue of the serrated edges and trying to find veterinarians that would be willing to do analysis on these animals. Tex Graves told me that the first veterinarian that he took out in a Logan County case, he said, would you do the necropsy in the field so I can watch? And that is the case that turned Sheriff Yarnell or Tex Graves into, there's no question these are creatures from outer space. And this is the reason why. Tex was standing there. The vet is taking the cow apart, and when he got down into that chest, and looked up at Sheriff Graves and said, "There's no heart here. The pericardium is here. There are no slits in the pericardium. There's no blood in the pericardium. There's no fluid in the pericardium. And there's no blood in this chest. The heart is gone. Don't ever contact me to investigate another one of these ever again." And Tech said they ran into that problem with veterinarians.
Linda, it has been quite an interview. I have to tell you, this is an achievement to finally get that. And, you know, it also corroborated some of the things that Michael Sala has been saying for so long. And it is just really wonderful stuff. Thank you so much for being with us this week on Dreamland.
Thank you for letting me share truth and facts.
Truth and facts. Rare things these days. People love a lie. They'll flock to the lie. But when you tell them the truth, they turn the other way. But not you folks. Not especially those of you who listen to the very end of the program. You want the truth. That's healthy. That is where the human future lies. We're either going to go there armed with the truth and the understanding that it brings, or we're going to fall there through the lies perpetrated by the government and so many of those who follow its lead.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and our family of subscribers. Our news editor is Ann Streber. Our science reporter is Linda Moulton Howe. Our webmaster is Daniel Stiegel. And I'm your Dreamland announcer, Brian Arnold. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.